Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Morbid early and ad-free. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
You're listening to a Morbid Network podcast.
Hey guys, I have to tell you about this all-in-one shake that I'm freaking loving. It's called Cachava. I love saying it. It's actually hands down the best thing that I've found to help me get all my essential nutrients into one day. Cachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics. In other words, literally everything that your body craves to feel your best. And I know what you're thinking. Something that good for me cannot possibly taste good. Wrong. That's where Cachava really earns their over 52,000 five-star reviews. It actually tastes freaking amazing. It's very creamy and smooth, and it comes together with just water. And it comes in five delicious flavors. Personally, vanilla and chai are my personal favorites, but it also comes in chocolate, matcha, and coconut acai, which I still need to try. Some people like to drink it as part of a healthy breakfast or lunch, and other people love it as a protein-packed snack before or after a workout. It's really perfect for that because it has 25 grams of plant protein per serving. Personally, I like to add mine to my overnight oats. I add a scoop and I mix it all up to get a little more protein into my oats. And literally, I can have that for breakfast and feel satiated, nourished, beautiful, functioning, all throughout my day. It's incredible. Please send me more of it because I love it so much. It makes me feel very, very good. And guess what, guys? Cachava is offering our listeners 10% off for a limited time. Just go to cachava.com/morbid, spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com/morbid.
Guys, it's hard to start working out, and it's even harder to maintain working out, especially if you don't like your fitness routine, which a lot of times it can be dull, just for me personally, that's all I'm saying. But Peloton really keeps me motivated, mainly because I love the instructors and I feel like I'm losing my friends when I'm not on that bike. But also, Peloton helps you start no matter what level you're at. Wherever you're starting, there's thousands of classes to get you moving. Whether that's beginner or advanced rides, feel-good live DJ rides, or artist theme rides, they've got something for you. And like I said, the Peloton bike instructors not only are wonderful and feel like your friends, but they help keep you motivated from day one. They'll show you the basics, you know, take the guesswork out of your workout and encourage you to build. So you're like, I want to make you proud of me. And Peloton Entertainment keeps you moving. Watch your favorite TV shows and live sports as you ride. Perfect for those days when you just don't want to miss a thing. Wherever you're starting, get moving with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at www.onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply. I have really, really cool news. Okay, so about a year ago, I got to share the absolutely life-changing, mind-blowing, like, universe-warping news about writing my first book, The Butcher and the Wren. I could never have dreamed of the support that I received then and that the book continues to receive now from all of you. You are amazing. You set records with the numbers of pre-orders. You made every edition a bestseller. It's you guys. You did it. And it was even nominated recently for an Audi Award. It's for Best Audiobook with a Multi-Voice Performance. Yep, yep. Those voice actors are the best. And now I am so proud and so thrilled to share two pieces of incredible news with you. I have been sitting on these two pieces of news forever, and I can't wait to scream them to you. So the first one is that The Butcher and the Wren is going to be out in paperback this summer on July 25th. So you can finally get that paperback edition. And to make this even cooler, guess what the paperback edition is going to have?
What?
It's going to have a sneak peek of a chapter from book two.
Oh my God. And guess what? I got to read it and I can tell you it's a really good chapter.
It is. That's right. There's going to be a sequel. It is coming. You get to read part of it in that paperback if you get it. And what's even better is that my publisher is giving away free signed copies of the paperback to the first 50 people who pre-order. So if you want to pre-order the paperback with that sneak peek chapter of book two in it, you can go to tinyurl.com slash TBATW paperback. That's tinyurl.com/TBATW paperback. Thank you guys so much. You're amazing. Thank you so much for listening, supporting, reading, being the best weirdos that you ever could be. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you and love you. I just want to hug you all, but I won't because it's virtual, but like feel it, okay? I can't wait for you guys to read more Jeremy and Ren this summer, and it's going to be awesome. Just you wait.
Kapowie! Hey, weirdos, I'm Ash.
And I'm Elena.
And this right here that you're listening to is morbid.
It sure is.
Yeah.
It sure is. It remains to be so.
Whoa, that was poetry.
I am poetry.
You are poetry.
I'm just kidding.
No, you know what you are? You're prose.
I'm prose? That's beautiful.
Yeah, I love the word prose.
I do too.
Prose was a sponsor of ours one time.
It's been a sponsor of
ours. Yeah. Prose.
I like prose.
This is not an ad for prose.
I was going to say the word prose has no meaning anymore, but it's fun while it lasted.
Prose.
Prose.
Guys, it's only Tuesday and we're losing our GD minds.
Yeah.
You ever have a week like that?
It's been quite a week. It's just, you know, that it's 2023, man.
Yeah. I was like, oh, it's going to be such a great year because I'm getting married that year. That's probably the only good thing that will take place.
But you know what? We're having a positive attitude because we have positive candles.
And lots of statues.
Yeah, Mikey really like positive vibed this place up.
The joy candle is wild and over there.
Yeah, we have like a positive energy candle and she is lit right now and she's also lit. Like
we lit her and then she got
lit. She lit herself. Like she is really going off right now, which makes me think that she's like, hey, bitches,
she would
stop
never.
Talking so negatively. I am positive energy. Hear me roar.
I feel it.
Engulfing this room in flames.
Fuck yeah. And I have some intention flowers sitting next to me.
Yeah.
I have a whole shelf that Mikey put together for me.
So it's positive vibes only, okay? Positive vibes only, even when there's tons of shit happening around us that is not great.
So I was going to like
we're
start
here.
Making an acronym of everything you said, but then you really just kept going and I lost the letters. But I was like, PVO. Oh, wait, she's doing more.
PVO.
E-W-T-B.
Oh, I said, did I say shitty?
Yeah.
Or bad?
Okay. You said shitty. Of course you said shitty. Who are you?
T-H-A-U.
Pavshmataho. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
You know, that's what everybody's motto should be.
So anyway.
What is it again? Say it again.
Pavshmataho.
Yep, there's your motto. That's your affirmation for today. But positive vibes only here. And you guys rule. I was talking to a listener today.
You were?
Yes, I was. Because her name is Danny. And she's awesome. I really like her.
Is she a phantom?
She's a phantom. There you go. I don't know.
That.
I'll ask.
I loved
but
that show.
The reason that I was chatting briefly with her was, I think in one of the recent episodes, we were talking about how, we were talking about it with JVN. We were talking about how we put butter on Pop-Tarts.
Oh, hell yeah.
And I was like, is that gross, everybody? But no, she was like, I do that too. And then she was like, also don't judge me, but I put butter with my peanut butter
on
toast.
I do that too, and so do you.
And she said, I put butter on saltines. And I was like, bitch, are we the same person? Because I was like, wait a second.
See,
that's spooky.
That is.
Because
that's spooky.
That shit. Also, That Spooky is a great podcast. Go listen to
it.
But that shit is spooky. I thought that's stuff that whenever I do it, everyone around me is like, that's really gross. And like, you should check yourself before you wreck yourself. And
so, yeah.
To hear somebody sit there and just out with it, say like, I also do these two very niche things.
Do you think that putting butter on before peanut butter is niche?
I feel like it is because everyone I've ever mentioned it to is like, that's really gross.
I wonder if I got it from you. I must have gotten it from
you. You did because Ma, I think I got it from dad. And probably. Then I probably passed it to you because I was like, try this.
It's fucking good.
Because John is horrified by it. Every time I do it, he's like, you are something else.
No, everybody should give it a shot. Where I do draw the line, though, is butter on saltines.
Have you tried it, though?
No.
Have you tried it? You haven't tried it. I'm going to have you try it. And you're going to go.
I probably will. It's I love a good dipping.
Because like, you're not like smearing butter on it. It's just like a light little.
A dabble do ya.
On it. And you just take it just with the salt. I don't know what. It just like gives it a little sweet, little salty. Just enough. Not too much.
I might That's have all. Made this confession before about saltines on this podcast. But if I haven't, get ready for a fucking wild one. This is
disgusting.
Are you
one of those wild people?
Not anymore. No. Am I like, no. But when I was little, this is like a gross, fucking nasty thing that I did when I was little. I didn't require supervision. Well, I did require it, but I didn't get it.
You just didn't get it.
I used to dip my saltines into water and eat them. And sometimes, this is so gross, we used to live with this lady named Judy, me and my mom, and she was, Judy, was the best. But like, she ran a daycare, so there was a lot of us to keep track of. So, you know, maybe I wasn't always getting the eyes on me. I used to dip my saltines into the pool and eat them.
Oh,
how Mikey's fucking gross is that?
Mikey's head just whipped over your like,
I would
what?
Like to tell you that I was like 7.
How
so,
old were you?
No. I would like to
oh,
tell
I thought you
were
saying
today,
I would like to like, say that
while
I was 7.
I confess that I was
but
7.
I was actually 17.
It
or
was
something.
Actually last week. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm actually about to do it now.
No, but I'm actually going to go find the nearest pool and a bag of saltines and have myself a good time.
Have myself a day.
Whoa.
Have myself an afternoon.
Isn't that so foul?
Like that's foul.
And it wasn't even a saltwater pool because like,
yeah,
no.
That's like, one of those things that like, I'm always of the mind, like, have you tried it?
No, but you know what? You should not try dipping
I feel
your
like that's one of those things that I can say is not great.
Yeah. I also wrote my name on the wall at Judy's house because I had recently seen Madeline do that in her movie. But fun fact, you get in trouble for writing on Judy's walls.
In case you were thinking of writing on Judy's walls,
you get
everybody,
in trouble.
You will get in trouble.
And gymnastics will get taken away from you.
Aw.
I know.
Don't take after school activities away.
Never.
It's important.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's just me. I'm not telling you how to parent. But whatever.
So what did these fuckers do next?
So I think we should, yeah. So, but you know what? Shout out to Danny for being the same person that I am. Like, what's up, soul sister?
Danny, did you dip your saltines in the pool? Because we could also be friends.
We could also be soul sisters.
She's like, girl,
she's
step
like,
back.
No. The she's line like, has been drawn.
She said, I don't identify with you.
But yeah, that was funny. So that was a nice like little like it's a nice moment to like connect for a second yeah. And be like, girl, yeah. But now we're gonna get into some terrible shit. We're gonna get into part two of Burke and Hare. These fuckers suck.
I know, and that's the thing. Whenever you say like, oh, we're gonna talk about Burke and Hare, it sounds like a fun story.
It sounds whimsical.
It sounds like a fairy tale.
Like it does sound like a fairy tale.
I don't know why I said it that way.
It sounds so fairy-like. Fairy-like.
It was a soul. So
it does sound whimsical.
It does.
I agree with you. But when we last left them, they murdered a grandma and her grandson.
Separately, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And all four seemed to have involvement.
Yeah. And then Dr. Knox there was like, oh, weird that you brought in an old lady and her grandson.
At the same time.
They don't look as good, so I'm going to give you a little less money for it. And it's like, my guy.
He knew.
My dude.
Like, I'm on the record right now.
Yeah.
He knew.
Oh,
You're not getting all these body, body, oddy, oddy, oddies and not questioning it.
They just rolled in there
right.
With a woman and her grandson. And you're telling me that you didn't question that these two people died side by side?
Right. And they had already been sus as fuck before.
Yeah.
Because of the last woman before
Mary.
They killed the... Yeah. They knew she was known in town.
Yeah.
They were the last people seen with her. Mm-hmm. Yadi-da-doo.
Yadi-da-doo.
Like,
so,
fuck this.
Yeah. It's not great. But, you know, the last one that they had before we stopped part one was Effie, who they believed her name was Effie.
Right.
And in their confessions, they were like, I think she went by Effie. It's
oh,
like,
nice.
That's nice.
Also, I think that's the cutest name. I didn't
Effie?
Get a chance to say
it
last
week. It is very
week.
Adorable.
Yeah.
That's a whimsical name.
Oh, totally.
Effie.
I follow this girl, sorry, on TikTok that she will categorize names and she does them into like whimsical names, like old fashioned names.
That's fun.
I'm going to find her name later and tell you.
Yeah. I want to know what my name would be categorized into.
Well, so she does like baby names. So I've actually never seen your name on there.
Oh.
She does like, if
my name was a baby name at one point.
No way.
Yeah.
It was?
Yeah.
I never seen you on there. You're not whimsical. You're not old fashioned.
At one point, it was a baby name.
One day.
Because I was a baby at one point.
You were a cute little baby. I wasn't there to like witness it in person.
Because like see photographic evidence.
Maybe I was in a different life.
One of your souls probably was.
Probably.
I think that.
Anyway.
But either way, poor Effie. She was a hawker. She was actually known around town. She was known to Burke.
Of course she was.
So she, and when I last told you guys, she had gone door to door kind of selling, and I think she was going to sell him bits of leather for his cobbling work.
Okay.
And he enticed her into a barn with alcohol and the promise of rest. Once she had fallen asleep, he said he laid a cloth over her and suffocated her as they did the others.
Oh, okay.
Then they just brought her to Knox's dissection room and got 10 shillings for the body.
Wow.
Yep. So as the summer went on, the stress of maintaining this whole thing was beginning to wear a little bit on Burke and Hare. Not in the sense of them having remorse or guilt, but just in the sense of stress of doing it.
Yeah.
And trying to maintain the whole thing. And it was also, you know, it was wearing on their significant others as well. So Laird, like we talked about, had been at least like on like outsidely involved in the murder. She was definitely there.
Yeah.
And participating
in her boarding house, right?
Yeah. And she was participating in some way, luring people in, you know, help plying them with alcohol.
Yeah.
Helen McDougal, like we said, she had not actively involved herself in any of the killings up to this point.
Except the grandson.
The grandson, she didn't actively involve herself in his killing. She was only there to calm him down when he couldn't find his grandma.
Oh, okay.
So if we're talking specifically,
yeah,
was she involved in a killing? We have no evidence of that right now.
Okay.
That is,
but
to me.
But you're about to tell me something.
That to me is accomplish it right there. Like you were
hell
calming
yeah.
down this kid.
Yeah.
When did you know what was happening to his grandma or did you not?
I mean, I feel like this is a small fucking boarding house.
That's
like,
what I think, but, you know.
I don't know.
But, she hadn't actively involved herself in any of the killings, like I said. And she's with Burke, just to lay that out first.
Yes.
So Hare actually ended up looking at that as a liability because she hadn't actively involved herself in any of the crimes, but she was around. And knew what was going on, it seems like.
Yeah.
Which, it's one of those things where it's like, if you're going to be around, you better make one of the stab wounds so that we can all point to you and say you did it too.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you can just go, I didn't do anything, but here's all the information.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to be implicated at all.
That's how he was looking at it.
Exactly. He was like, the fact that the three of us have been actively involved in these and she isn't, but is around, that's a problem.
Yeah.
So, in fact, at one point, Hare had gone so far as to suggest that Burke kill the woman in order to protect themselves.
The fuck?
Yeah.
Hey, I think you should off your wife because she hasn't murdered with us yet.
He even came up with a plan how to do it. He wanted Burke to take her into the country for a few weeks, then write Hare and inform him of McDougal's death. And, of course, in reality, the murder would have been committed in the back room of the boarding house. And with McDougal's corpse being just another one of the bodies that they gave to Dr. Knox.
It's wild. My wife died. Here she is.
Isn't that so wild?
It's so crazy that, like, I've been getting all these bodies for you and now my wife died.
So when he was trying to have him set up an alibi.
Yeah.
Like, he was trying to set this whole thing up. He had really thought about this,
If I was Burke, right?
Is with McDougal.
Yeah. If I was Burke, I'd be worried that Hare was going to kill my lady.
Yeah. Well, I guess fortunately for Helen McDougal, Burke may have been an opportunistic monster.
Yeah.
Like an actual piece of shit. But I guess his one line was that he wouldn't readily murder the woman that he claimed to love, I suppose. So they did not go forward with that plan.
Everyone's got a line.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to give him anything. But
I'm
like,
not
at
giving
least,
him anything, no.
At least he didn't do that, I guess.
Yeah.
I think this kind of shows, like, the eagerness with which Hare wanted to dispatch Helen McDougal. That's kind of evidence of the growing tension, not only between the whole group, but between Burke and Hare specifically.
Mm-hmm.
So then the next murder really didn't do anything to relieve Burke's suspicions of Hare. Like, this made things worse. So in early summer, Burke estimated it like late June, which was around the anniversary
of the Battle of Bannockburn, which I just thought was interesting, the name
Bannockburn. I like that.
Burke and MacDougall had left Edinburgh for a brief period of time just to visit friends in Falkirk.
Okay.
During this time, Hare and Laird were having a lot of financial difficulties and had ended up pawning everything they owned that was of value.
Oh, everything?
Yeah. Anything that was of value, they were pawning. Yet when Burke and MacDougall returned a short time later, suddenly Hare and Laird appeared to no longer have any financial troubles.
Interesting.
So when Burke asked Hare if he'd been, quote unquote, doing any business, you know what that means.
I love that he's like, doing any business. Like, these two are fucking business partners. Yeah. Are you kidding
me? Were you doing business when I wasn't here?
Wow.
So he asked him, were you doing any business while I was away with Helen? Hare denied it, said no. However, in discussion with Dr. Knox, Burke learned that during their absence, Hare had, quote, fell in with a drunk woman in the street in the Westport and enticed her back to the boarding house, killed her, and sold the body to Knox and kept the money for himself and then lied about it.
What?
Which I'm like, wow, you guys are shitbag monsters. And now you're even being shitbag monsters to each other.
Yeah, I mean, it was only a matter of time.
It was. Like, you're not... What, you think you have a friend?
Yeah, like, you're both like, sociopaths. That's you don't the have thing. A friend. Like,
neither one of you gives a shit about anybody.
Right.
So for some reason, Burke and Hare started getting pretty reckless as the summer was drawing to an end. I'm not sure why. They just started getting very reckless.
The heat.
It's the heat, you know? One night, the two spotted a policeman by the name of Andrew Williamson, and he was dragging a very obviously drunk woman to the Westport Watch House. So Burke saw this and called out, let that woman go on to her lodgings. And the police officer, Williamson, said he didn't know where the woman lived. That's why he was taking her to the watch house to keep her from spending the night on the street.
Yeah.
So
he's like, I'm a good person.
Like, I'm actually trying to do a good thing here, but right. Cool. So after like a brief conversation, Burke was actually able to convince the officer to release her to him. She was brought back to the boarding house and she was murdered and sold to Knox for 10 shillings.
If you don't tell me that this is how they got caught, I am leaving the room.
According to Burke, he, quote, had a good character with police, which is why he was able to convince that police officer to release the very obviously drunk woman to him that night. But this brazen act clearly suggests a very misplaced confidence that, don't worry, in a few months at least, will result in their capture. But I'm telling you right now, this didn't do it.
I have to go.
He had a police officer hand a woman to him.
Like?
Who he murdered that night and brought back to Dr. Knox and was paid for it.
That is beyond.
And they did not get caught.
And also the fact that it took months for them to get, like, if... And it's sad because, again, it's they are taking advantage of who they believe to be, quote unquote, less dead.
Yeah.
And they're just proving that stigma, you know, by like you literally take your victim from a police officer and the police don't even realize that this woman is who she is and that she got killed.
Exactly.
That's and that, so fucked.
And that this police officer doesn't care. Like just handed her over. And that was it. I don't need to know what happened to her after that.
So sad.
It's so sad. And it really is such a misplaced confidence, though, because he's out here being like, oh, yeah, like, I look at what I did.
Right.
I convinced a police officer to give her to me. That, as horrible as the situation is, that is going to be the thing that takes them down, is them thinking that this is who they are now. They're able to have police officers just hand them victims.
They're above the law.
So that is going to be an issue for them later, but it was too little too late.
Whenever I feel like a murderer starts to get that kind of confidence, it's like a tailspin.
It's hubris.
Is that how you say that, tailspin? Yeah. Ash can't say anything, but she can say tailspin.
Hell yeah. And so in the late summer, Burke and MacDougall, Helen, his wife, moved from Tanner's Close, the boarding house, to a small cottage not far from the boarding house.
Okay.
There, they shared this little cottage with a couple called the Brogans.
I like that name.
I do, too. It's, like, very, I don't know why, it's, like, cozy.
Yeah.
I'm just here with the Brogans.
I would call them the Brogies.
The Brogies. I would just call them the Brogues.
I'm with my Brogies.
I'm just here with my Brogans. So some have suggested that the move was Burke's attempt to keep MacDougall safe because of what you were saying after Hare and Laird had suggested that they murder her
yeah.
to keep her quiet, he might have felt like he had to put a little distance between Hare and his wife, which I'm like, you probably should stop murdering people with that guy, too.
Seriously.
Like, I don't know.
Well, and also, I bet it was that, and then I bet what added on to it was the fact that he committed a murder without him.
Yeah, and kept
then
the money.
Lied about it.
Yeah.
It was almost the perfect crime. Stacks of cold, hard cash sitting on the table, unguarded. Who wouldn't be tempted to slowly reach their hand out and steal? A pile of Monopoly money from the banker. Monopoly is one of those games that can bring out our most devious selves, and Monopoly Go takes that gleeful mischievousness to your phone in a wildly popular twist on the classic that you can play anywhere, anytime. Collect rent from friends on iconic properties, bankrupt them by pulling a heist on their vault, even use a wrecking ball to shut down their monuments. And Monopoly Go has timed tournaments where you can team up with friends to unlock big prizes and try to top the leaderboards. Whether you're helping out your friends or going head-to-head for riches, Monopoly Go is an absolute blast. Go download it now free on the App Store or Google Play. Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples. Guys, I am obsessed with Astapro, and you should be too, because seasonal allergies are a freaking bummer. They make me feel like crud, they make me sneeze, they make my boogies all yucca, and it's just really kind of gross. But Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It is the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter OTC allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing. Have you tried Astapro, Elena? Because I'm obsessed.
I have, and it's so fast!
It's so fast! Astapro, it's faster, bro. Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. It's faster, bro. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
But it was at this house that Burke and Hare met their next victim.
No.
A washerwoman by the name of Mrs. Hostler. So one afternoon, the woman had just finished her washing for the day, and Burke and Hare convinced her to return the following day to have a few drinks with them. They were very charming. They were able to convince a lot of people to do this.
Sounds like it.
And she did. So the next day, after she'd become drunk, they convinced her to lie down in an adjacent room where they killed her by suffocation. So this is what they did. They get their people drunk, and then they do it. And they're people who they know are desperate. They know are on hard times. They know are going to say yes to a lot of drinks just right. to numb whatever is happening in their lives.
And it's fucked up. It is. And I feel like it's also so important to say, like, how long it actually takes to suffocate someone.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they weren't just, this wasn't like a quote-unquote easy way to get away with it or like an easy way to do it. Like, these people are fucking monsters. You have to stand there for like, what is it? Isn't it like 7 minutes or
it's
something?
It's very, like, for strangling. It's definitely, and for suffocation too. It's
probably similar.
It's brutal.
Yeah.
And it's aggressive. It's violent. It's aggressive. Like, nobody's laying there motionless. They're laying there fighting for their lives trying to breathe.
Exactly.
It's awful.
So fucked. And like, for you to stand over somebody for a matter of minutes and do that, yep. like,
you gotta be shut down.
Seriously.
Like, there's gotta be just nothing there. It's just a cold, empty box in there.
It's so crazy.
Well, then they just loaded her body into a box. They stored that box in the coal house until later that afternoon. And then they transported her to Dr. Knox, and they got 8 shillings for her body.
Oh, okay.
Not a full 10.
So, like, all over the place.
Yeah, he's just making random assessments
right.
of price here.
Make an assessment.
I thought of that same thing. Make an assessment. Not long after the murder of Hostler, Burke, I don't know why I just said that all in one sentence. Don't you hate when you go to read a sentence that you wrote and you're like, How do I speak?
How did I mean to say that out loud? Well, sometimes when you type something, it sounds different in your head than the way you say it out loud.
That's the thing. Or I forget a punctuation mark and then my brain just runs everything together.
I'm a punctuation monster. I like over punctuate everything.
See, that's what happened here. And then my brain's like, no comma, just keep going.
Who gives a fuck about an
But what I meant was not long after the murder of Hostler, Burke and McDougal welcomed into their home Anne McDougal. Same last name. Yes, it's a cousin of Helen's.
Bitch.
It was actually a cousin of Helen's previous husband, so like technically.
Cousin-in-law.
Yeah.
That's a cousin, though. Drew's cousins are my
Still
cousins.
A cousin.
I love them.
Still a cousin. One afternoon, while the Brogans, the other couple that they were living with, were out of the house, Burke and Hare murdered Anna McDougal.
They murdered his wife's cousin.
Yep.
What
And it
the
was with
fuck?
Hare doing most of the work, of course. Burke was not the one who did most of the work. So clearly Hare is trying to, like, put some kind of message out there.
Yeah, like assert
like he's
his
getting
dominance.
Closer to her.
Like, oh, my God.
And it's like Burke is allowing it.
That made my stomach
and going
flip,
along
actually.
With it. Yeah. Because he's like, I'm killing your family members now.
My God. He is. They're both fucked, but, like, that's another level.
Yeah. I can't. And because of this whole, like, it's a relative thing. Yeah. Burke said that he did not like to begin first on her because she was a relative.
Oh,
of
totally, yeah. totally.
So don't
totally.
Worry about that.
What was the wife like, hey, what happened to my fucking cousin?
Yeah. She was like, what's going on here? But they loaded her body into a trunk and they intended to take her body to Knox. But before they had the chance, the Brogans came home. Ooh. And knowing that no one in the house owned a trunk, they started asking several questions as to the origin of this trunk that was now sitting in their house.
I'm going to admit something to you. I thought they put her in the trunk of a car because I forgot that we were like way back.
We were way back.
I was like, nobody owned a trunk. And no, I was like, a steamer trunk.
Exactly.
Got you.
When it became clear the couple was not going to stop asking these questions, Burke and Hare.
Hey, where'd this fucking trunk come from and what's in it?
Like, they were literally like, hey, where did this trunk come from? And they're like, don't worry about it. And then like,
they're also like, don't open it.
They like walk in the other room and put their coats up and they're like, but about that trunk, like, do you have any information? And they're like, no, we don't. And then they're like, okay, cool.
Can we open it and, like, see?
Can we, like, open the trunk and maybe just see what's inside? No, we can't.
Well, okay. Maybe there's, like, a name inside.
Do you guys want dinner? Yeah, we would love dinner. Do you want to, like, should we ask the trunk if it wants to be part of dinner? Like, what? They just aren't, we're going to let the trunk go.
I don't blame them. I'm not going to let a random appearing trunk in my home go.
I'm not. And Burke and Hare eventually,
for the record, sorry,
Burke and Hare eventually sat down with the Brogans, Mr. Brogan, and explained the entire situation to him.
They said, hey, it's just like times are tough and we like to make extra money by murder. And what do you think?
And then they said, hey, do you want to be in on this and get some of the money if you don't say anything? And he was like, okay.
And he meant it?
Yep. He meant it. He said, okay.
I thought you were going to say he meant it, and then he motioned for the police.
He said,
I know you can't call them back then.
He said, yeah, that's fine with me.
Wow. How does horseshit find horseshit that then finds some more horseshit?
What's crazy, too, is that with each murder committed in this particular period, they're just growing increasingly reckless, first of all. And they're also pulling apart from each other. Drastically.
Yeah.
They're doing things on their own. They're not listening. They're killing each other's relatives at this point. Like, seriously. Shit's going down. Now they're inviting other people into this whole scheme. Like, bitch, the more people you have in this scheme, the more shit is going to fall apart.
It's not the merrier.
No, it is not the merrier. They're also splitting that profit in way more pieces, which is way less advantageous to them with they're murdering people.
Yeah.
And well, now you're splitting the profits like, now they're splitting it four ways.
But are they not because this one didn't take place in Laird's boarding home?
I think because she is part of it, she gets that one shilling just for her silence.
Oh, I see.
That's how he's able to hold all these people. They are able to hold all these people. And that's why McDougal is such a liability to them because she's not getting anything for it. She's not getting anything for her silence.
Yep.
And they're not just going to pay her. Unless she has something to do with it, because you need her hand to have blood on it, so you can go, she did it too.
Yep.
That way she's not going to be eager to go to the authorities because then she has to admit that she's been part of it.
Okay.
So they're not getting that from her.
This is nutso.
So that brings us to the beginning of the end.
Oh.
So for obvious reasons, and with very few exceptions, Burke and Hare killed mainly elderly and incapacitated and transient, like down on their luck women.
Yeah.
That seems to be their MO.
Oh, they go away from it.
That, well, although they were almost always opportunists, like they were always just, they weren't like following people and like trolling for days, you know what I mean? Their preferred victim type likely had something to do with the fact that women were just much easier to overpower in their mind.
Mm-hmm.
And that, but what's wild is like at least one of them and probably more of them, there was evidence that they tried to fight back and resist. And this became very evident in this whole thing that like they were definitely doing this because they could overpower their victims.
Yeah.
It became evident that they thought this was the case and that it wasn't in October when they murdered James Wilson, who was otherwise known as Daft Jamie.
What does like daft mean again?
So I'll explain to you. According to George MacGregor Wilson, he was described as, quote, a lad who, while deficient in intellect, was kind at heart.
Don't you dare.
He was
ruin
a universal
right
favorite.
Stop.
Among the townspeople, he was. Now, Jamie's had a very kind nature. He was not confrontational. He was not an aggressive man.
Oh.
The people loved him. He was like very beloved, but he also was kind of like a frequent target of bullies.
Fuck that.
They would just like taunt him and shit. And in his early 20s, by the time of this happening, Jamie's father had died many years earlier, and his mother was a hawker who was often traveling selling goods. So he spent a lot of his time just wandering the streets in Edinburgh.
If Jamie doesn't live, I'm leaving.
So, as a result of this, he became a very familiar figure to people around town.
Yeah.
Especially to the people who would, just out of the kindness of their heart, give him food and gifts.
Take
because
him
he
in
was
or...
just a nice kid.
Oh, I
and he's
love
in his
him.
20s at this point, but I say kid, but that's a kid to
yeah,
me.
That's a kid, yeah.
And they kind of like looked after him in a way because like they just knew he was like, you know, he needed it.
See, there is some kind of community here.
Yeah, there is.
I was looking for it.
There is. Now, Jamie Wilson was definitely not only the antithesis of a typical Burke and Hare victim because he was not a drinker. He was not a woman.
Right.
He was not. He was pretty strong.
He's not an older person.
He's not older. And he's well known to everybody in town.
Mm-hmm.
Very well known. Like this is like front page of Time magazine kind of well known.
Like even more so than the
very
previous.
More so.
Yeah.
So this is just like totally the antithesis of their typical victim. He was also the stupidest choice for a victim. Because, like I said, he didn't drink. You're not going to ply him away with alcohol.
Yeah.
So what the fuck is your move?
And then you're going to have to overpower him while he's sober.
Yeah.
He can fight you.
He's not going to be easily lured away. And when he is suddenly gone, everyone's going to notice immediately.
Yeah, he's like everyone's kid.
You're not going to be able to bring him to Dr. Knox and have it be like, oh yeah, it's just weird. Daft Jamie just dropped dead. It's like, no,
right.
No one's going to believe that. Now, it was actually Margaret Laird who'd chosen Jamie as a victim because she discovered him alone and looking for his mother at a grass market one day in early October.
Fuck you, Margaret.
Yep.
Fuck
That's what I
you.
Said. Now, according to Burke, Jamie agreed to accompany her back to the boarding house, but he was very anxious the entire walk back to the house and kept asking questions.
Oh my God, you're ruining me.
When they reached the house, Laird left Jamie with Hare while she went to find Burke, whom she eventually found at a local shop, and the two of them went back to Tanner's Close, the boarding house. Back at the house, Laird left the three men alone, which they offered Jamie some drinks, and after a little while, and Jamie did drink with them.
Yeah.
He became a little tired and laid down at the bed, and that's the point where Hare laid next to him.
No.
A few minutes passed before Hare threw himself on top of Jamie and attempted to cover his mouth and nose.
But it didn't work.
The same thing.
It didn't work.
Jamie, however, was neither drunk or incapacitated at this point. So he started struggling and resisting, and the two men fell from the bed and continued to struggle on the floor. Eventually, though, Burke was able to get a hold of Jamie's feet and legs, which he held tight as Hare suffocated Jamie.
No.
So he, like, they almost lost this one. And this was the stupidest. Thank goodness they were so stupid, but this is so tragic.
I'm like, so.
They're all tragic, but this one's just like.
Yeah,
are you fucking kidding me? Like, and like, Margaret, go fuck yourself. Like,
he's looking for his mom, and that's when you fucking pray upon him. And he's
clearly, like. Yeah. Like, intellectually a little immature.
Yeah.
And it's like, he's looking for his mother, and he's like in his early 20s. Like, come on, man.
That is fucking disgusting.
It's vile. It's like, really vile.
I'm so angry right now.
It's, ugh. And
oh, so, I had hope.
I know. I felt bad building you up like that, but I was like, I don't know how else to say this. Well,
that's how you tell the story. Yeah.
Now, in nearly every case, Burke and Hare were very careful to get rid of their victims' clothing and whatever possession the victim had on them at the time.
So they would just be like, anything. I found them naked.
Essentially, they just bring the body to Dr. Knox. And in this case, though, their victim had a lot of belongings. Most of the time, their victim didn't have a lot of things on them because they didn't have a lot of things in the world.
Was he walking around with like a lot of his things?
He had a lot of belongings, and he had some things of value because he was, you know, which they ended up just splitting between them. Yeah, they just stole all the things, and eventually they gave his clothing to Burke's brother, who passed them on to his younger children.
And he knew?
Yep.
Fuck this.
Yep. So, and this is the thing. So his brother didn't know, but like they knew that he was going to they knew that Constantine was going to give these clothes to his children.
Yeah, that's
and they still allowed
gross.
It to happen.
Yeah, because they have actually no souls.
Yeah, because Constantine Burke and the children didn't recognize the clothing. So they were just like, okay. They did eventually end up trading them for like other items in town, but still. So putting Jamie's very recognizable clothing and belongings out in the public, because they were selling these goods now too.
Right.
That was a really bad idea.
Because it's not like you just like sold them to like some random person. You literally gave them to people in town that are connected to you.
Exactly. And then you sold the belongings he had to people in town who are like, I know what this is.
And I got that from Burke. I got that from Hare or Laird.
Exactly. So the more significant problem was that the boy would almost certainly be recognized by Dr. Knox.
Right.
That was the biggest problem. Like, when you bring this kid in, they're going to know exactly who he is. So, indeed, when it was brought to him, he wasn't home, but when they arrived with the body, his assistant didn't really look very quickly.
Okay.
So he just was like, okay, and he was like, you know what, can you return the next day and, you know, he'll Knox will be here and he'll pay you. So the next day when they did inspect the body, several of Knox's students were like, that's Jamie.
Oh.
And they were like, what the fuck? But Knox was like, you know what? Ready the body for dissection. So he 100% recognized this body he was like, just ready for it for dissection.
What the actual fuck?
And like, then he assured his students this ever so fresh male subject could not possibly be anyone they knew.
What?
Yeah.
Like, you really need to dissect that bad? You've had, how many bodies have we had up to this point? 15?
Yeah.
Like, I think you've learned some stuff.
Or maybe I think we 14 could at this point.
Take a second.
Yeah.
The fuck?
And later, these students were interviewed by police later, obviously, because they were very much,
they were
unwillingly involved in this.
Exactly.
They all told investigators they were pretty certain this was Jamie, but they didn't want to swear on it because Knox had told them that it wasn't.
Well, and then they're being intimidated by somebody who has power.
So they're like,
and can determine their future.
Exactly. So the final murder occurred on October 31st.
Oh.
Yeah.
Did they do that like on purpose?
I don't know. This is when Burke met Mary Dougherty. And it was in a Reimer's grocery store that morning on October 31st. So like the grandmother the pair had brutally murdered earlier that summer, Dougherty had come from out of town in search of her son.
Oh.
And was virtually unknown to anyone in Edinburgh.
Oh, no.
So Burke struck up a conversation with this older woman, telling her that he'd also come to Edinburgh. He was from Ireland. And, you know, wow, crazy. My mom's maiden name is Dougherty. So maybe we're related.
Probably not.
So in what she likely took as a friendly gesture, Burke invited her back to the home for breakfast with he and his wife. And she was like, great, absolutely, really friends.
Excited to make a friend, exactly.
Maybe they can help me find my son, right. That kind of thing. So once they were in the house, Helen McDougal tended to this new guest.
Mm-hmm.
While Burke went off in search of Hare.
Okay.
When he'd finally found Hare, they went back to Burke's house, where they found Helen and the guests cleaning up after breakfast. Well, it would have been pretty easy for them to overpower and murder Mrs. Dougherty, because she was very frail.
Sure.
The real issue that they were facing was getting rid of the couple who had been staying with Burke and McDougal for over a week. There was another couple in the house.
And they must have seen her come in and eat breakfast.
Exactly. So they were like, fuck. So it's trying to think quickly here. And Burke told this couple that he'd run into an old family friend. And he wondered if it would be, you know, terribly inconvenient for them to maybe find another place to stay for a night or two, just so they could have this Mrs. Dougherty, this family friend. He even went as far as suggesting they could stay with Hare and Laird for a few days. And the couple said, sure.
Uh-huh.
So that evening, things went about the usual way. So the couples had dinner with Mary Dougherty, Burke and Hare and Laird. And
they shared like multiple meals with woman.
Like really got to know her.
Wow.
Probably heard all about her life.
All about her missing son.
They had dinner with her at Burke and McDougal's home. Afterwards, they sang, they danced, they drank, had a great time
with
her.
They literally like had a little party.
I just can't even. But they, whatever the case was, whether this was a planned ruse that way or if they just really got into it that night and were like enjoyed her company and mm-hmm. still decided to go through it, around 10 or 11 that night, it became a little loud and disruptive, though, because they were getting happy, loud and disruptive, not fighting.
Like, yeah, they were like having
dancing,
fun.
Dancing, drinking, singing. And it was drawing attention of neighbors. So people wanted to know what was going on. So a woman from the house next door went to look through the window, and she saw what she later told police was Helen McDougal, quote, holding a bottle to the mouth of Dougherty, pouring the whiskey down her throat.
I always knew that I saw Helen McDougal for exactly who the fuck she was.
Later that evening, the disruption continued when Burke and Hare got into an actual argument, violent one. And they only stopped when Mary Dougherty fell from her stool and crashed onto the floor.
Oh, no, Mary.
And she couldn't get up. So Laird and McDougal, the two women, used the opportunity to get out of the house, which is when Burke and Hare used the same method that they always used to suffocate Mrs. Dougherty. But they did do something a little different with her, which I don't know if this was them trying something different that they were going to employ from here on out, or if this was just, I don't know.
Okay.
But whichever man was doing the actual suffocating, at some point they had used their hand to strangle Mrs. Dougherty around the throat, and this left deep bruises on her neck.
Are you the kind of person who loves a touch-up on the go, or maybe you're a full glam while in the carpool kind of human? Maybe there's no time for a full face in the morning between kids, pets, work, all of that. Maybe you woke up late. Well, Maybelline's new Instant Age Rewind Eraser Foundation is perfect for those moments when life moves fast. I absolutely love this foundation because it doesn't settle into any fine lines or wrinkles, and you can just toss this thing in your purse. You say, oh my gosh, I have a little smudge right here. Let me fix it really quick. It's perfect. And it's now in 16 shades. It offers SPF 20, which like that's amazing. It's got moisturizing pro vitamin B5. And I love the applicator. It's a blurring sponge. So you can just tap, tap, tap it to reset your foundation and you are good. Shop Maybelline's new Instant Age Rewind Eraser Foundation at amazon.com/instant-eraser-foundation. One of the first things I notice about people is their smile. I'm a sucker for teeth. I just love good teeth. And that made me hyper aware of my own teeth. And for a while, I was like, I don't know if these are like the best that they could be. But guess what? Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite clear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your sleuthin' friends start asking, what's your secret? To get started, all you need to do is order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. That is cheap. Bite clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered right to your door. They make it easy to kick off your smile journey.
Bite's treatment costs thousands of dollars less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA or FSA if you've got one. I personally used Bite, and I am so much more confident in my smile now. I also use their whiteners, and oh my god, these pearly whites are popping off. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code MORBID at Bite.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Bite. Hum. That's me biting.
Now, she was dead. They stripped her of her belongings, and Burke sent for Knox's assistant, and they explained that they just had another body to sell.
Wow, crazy.
I can't. Now, with this also, so they make the call. They're like, hey, you need to pick up this body tomorrow. And then they just went about the party. Drinking, dancing until the early hours of the morning.
With a dead body in
that they just murdered brutally.
They had just exactly.
Yep.
Wow.
So the following day, November 1st, Burke went to the boarding house to check on the lodgers that had been sent to the house.
Right.
And invite them back home for breakfast. Saying that, you know, their family friend, that old woman that they had met yesterday, she had grown very impudent, perhaps having taken too much liquor, and they found it necessary to put her out. Mm-hmm. That's how they wanted to put it.
Put her out.
Yeah. So one of these lodgers, Mrs. Gray, thought that Burke was behaving a little strangely.
Mm.
And she said he was very nervously watching her and calling after her when she began cleaning around a pile of straw near the corner of the room. Burke kept up his weird, like, anxious behavior for most of the morning. And when several of the occupants of the house needed to go out that afternoon, Burke actually instructed Mr. Brogan, who knows about all this stuff now, to sit in a chair by the bed in the corner and not move until he returned.
Okay, Blair Witch, what the fuck?
So he did. He sat in the chair. He didn't ask questions at first. And then when Burke left the house, he waited until he was out of sight. Because remember, this guy just joined this whole thing. He just wanted money.
Yeah.
He's not going to save your ass. So Burke's
still
out of sight.
Bad person.
So, and also, he doesn't give a shit. Like, right. This is not a good guy. This is somebody who just doesn't give a shit.
Exactly.
So when he tells him, you got to sit by this corner of the bed near the straw in the corner, he's like, sure, sure, sure. So he sits there. Burke leaves. Once he's out of his sight, Brogan just leaves the house. Okay. Like, he was like, I'm not doing that.
Yeah, like, fuck off.
So he left the house. And then Mrs. Gray, the lodger who thought that he was acting very strange, Dumbled. She's now alone in the house.
Yeah.
And she takes this opportunity to investigate.
Yes, bitch,
whatever it was by the bed that Burke was definitely trying to hide and was definitely trying to have, like, guarded by Mr. Brogan. So she starts poking around the straw pile in the bed, next to the bed, excuse me, and she found the nude body of Mary Dougherty.
Can
blood
you imagine?
All around her mouth and nose.
Why did she have blood around her mouth and
nose? Because she had been violently strangled. And probably, I'm assuming, they might have, like, hit her or something.
Oh, my God.
Something bad happened there. And she also had fallen from her stool.
Right. I
don't know
about
if she
that.
Had any, like, traumatic mm-hmm. fall there. So she literally finds this naked old woman who was clearly murdered in a pile of straw in the corner of their bedroom.
Wow. So she knows why she was sent out the night
yep.
before.
So she immediately tells her husband.
She's like, we gotta get the fuck out of here.
And the two of them start gathering up all their belongings, and they're like, we're getting the fuck out of here.
But then?
So Mrs. Gray is packing, and Mr. Gray started carrying things downstairs. And as this is happening, he ran into Helen McDougal.
I knew one of those fuckers was lurking.
And when he ran into Helen McDougal, he demanded that she explain what the fuck was going on. Like, he was like, you tell me why the fuck there's a body in that bedroom.
Yeah.
Like, you tell me. And at first, she tried to just, like, dismiss the question.
Yeah, because she's a little butthead.
But he kept pushing. He was like, no, you can't, you literally can't dismiss a body in your bedroom. Like, you need to explain that.
A naked old woman's body in your bedroom.
Like, tell me what that's about.
The fuck?
And so she finally broke down and said, I suppose you know very well what it is.
I don't, though.
And then she begged Mr. Gray not to say anything and then offered him several shillings in exchange for silence. And then Helen told Mr. Gray that Dougherty had died that night from an overdose of drink.
Yeah, right, bitch. Why is her mouth all bloody?
But he did not believe her.
Of course
not. He was like, no. And then she decided to switch her tactics. You remember Innocent McDougal over here. Remember, no, everybody.
I don't remember because I always had her number.
Poor innocent Helen. No. She had nothing to do with this.
Fuck Helen.
She decided to change her tactics when Mr. Gray wasn't going to believe the she overdosed on drinks, so we stripped her naked and tied her in a pile of straw.
Yeah.
So she was like, okay, and she started trying to convince him to join in on the scheme.
He's like, yeah, I have a conscience, though. That's so the only problem.
Helen's also an actual piece of shit. All four of these assholes are pieces of shit.
I knew it. I knew she had, there was too much going on for her not to know about. And the fact that she went along with it and didn't get paid is, like, wild.
Yeah, it truly is.
That says
is.
Even more.
Yeah, truly.
Like, I'm not saying, like, well, sure, they were getting paid, so that's why they did it. But it's like, no. Wow, you weren't even in on this.
Yeah, you weren't even, like, what the hell was going on in
and
your
you
head?
You were still cool with it.
Yep. And so she couldn't convince them to join the scheme. She wasn't getting a promise of silence from them. So she followed them into town.
Oh, shit.
And they ran into Laird in town.
Oh, I'm so nervous.
Somehow, the Greys agreed to join Laird and McDougal at a nearby public house for, like, a drink.
What?
And the women continued to try to convince them to stay quiet. They bought them rounds of drinks. They used every argument they could to try to convince them that this was something that was fine, ethically.
Y'all, don't drink a drink that they buy you.
What's good is they were very unpersuasive. The Greys got a bunch of free drinks out of the deal.
There you go.
And they left the bar that afternoon and went straight to the police.
Love that. I love that they were like, you know what? Yeah, we could
you can
use
buy
a
me
few
some
brewskis.
Drinks first. Yeah. But when they went to the police, they were made to wait several hours for someone to even listen to their story.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
That checks.
So when Mr. Gray was finally able to tell his stories to a police sergeant, the officer said that Gray was simply a disgruntled tenant looking to cause problems for his landlords.
I'd be like, do you want to, like, maybe go talk to anyone about this, though?
So that's what he was like. Do you want to come back to the house?
And, like, check and see and if the body's still
there? And
maybe
come see this corpse in the corner of a room? Do you want to do that? So they were like, yeah, totally. So he went with Mr. Gray to the home of Burke and McDougal.
The body
and
was
Burke
gone.
Confirmed the sergeant's theory, saying that the Grays were former tenants and that he'd had to turn them out for bad conduct.
Oh, please.
So Burke was like, yeah, you're right. Like, they just suck. They're just shitty tenants. But then the officer did a little search of the home. And there he found spatters of blood on the bed sheets.
Yep.
And the floor. And this was all where she had been killed before being brought to Knox.
Yeah.
And it all matched up with what Gray had told the police.
Right.
It was the same room. It was the spatters made sense for what had happened. So when asked, Burke and McDougal gave very inconsistent stories about who the woman was, when she left. And this alone was enough for the police to be like, you two need to come in and we're going to question you further.
Think?
Because they were like, you can't agree who she was or when she even left.
And
like,
why she's in your house. Like, she's literally in your fucking house.
So Burke and McDougal were taken down to the police station for questioning. The next day, officers went back to Burke's home to do a more thorough search, and they found more blood stains, and they also found Mary Doherty's blood-stained clothing. Meanwhile, additional officers, they also brought a police surgeon, Dr. Black. They all went to Dr. Knox's address, where they discovered Doherty's body being readied for dissection.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So they had the bloody clothing and the body now in their possession. And
holy
so
shit.
Now more officers were sent to Hare and Laird's boarding house, where they informed Margaret Laird that Captain Stewart wished to see her husband. So as they had done with the Greys, Laird tried to just dismiss the whole thing. The whole evening's events are being misunderstood here. She overdosed. We didn't do anything. It was just drunken revelry. But she was very unsuccessful, just as they were. And both Hare and Laird were taken into custody as well. And Burke and McDougal now were officially arrested after being questioned. Hare and Laird are just being brought in for questioning. So throughout the fall of 1828, Burke and Hare made tons of reckless and very risky decisions. In the beginning, they were doing things pretty undercover.
Mm-hmm.
They got so fucking reckless.
It unraveled.
Like, it's really wild to watch. It's a true downfall for them. But they were so fucking brazen and so weirdly confident that they could get away from this.
It is crazy how confident they were.
That's the thing. Like, Burke was even trying to explain away that why Dougherty was in his house. Like, why her body was in his house. Like,
and that
it's
just
wild.
Goes to show how fucking, like, delusional they were, or, like, like confident. It's like, what? Like, you really thought that was going to make sense? Or was really going to work?
Wait until you hear the story he tells. Oh, you want to hear the... Because he told one story, and now this is the other story he tells.
Okay.
It's... So his first formal explanation for why Dougherty's body was in his home, according to Burke, he and McDougal had begun their day like any other day.
With
any other day. And suddenly a man approaches him looking to have some shoes mended. He's a cobbler, after all.
Oh my, I literally forgot that.
Yeah, Burke had never seen the man. He didn't remember his name. He couldn't tell you anything about him. But he agreed to help him out, and he took his shoes and began to work. And while this stranger is, while he's working on this stranger's shoes, this stranger just drags a trunk into his house while he's working on his shoes.
This can't be real.
And he's working. He's just working, and he's like, I don't know why you have that crazy trunk in here, but that's fine. And Burke said, it's so weird. I could hear the man removing the ropes that were used to secure the trunk. And then I heard this sound of a man, like, burying something under a pile of straw, I think it was. Like, that's the sound that I heard.
No, I must go.
And I think that pile of straw was next to the bed. Yeah, it sounded like that.
I've left.
And he said, and then that man left.
Me
and then
too.
I discovered what that man had left in my house, and I tracked him down, and I demanded that he come back and he remove this body. And this guy said, sure, I will, but I can't come back until tomorrow morning to do it. And he said, okay, my guy, I guess.
Okay, my guy.
He said, all right, I guess I'll go back and just live with this naked dead body in a pile of straw in the corner of my bedroom for tonight.
As one does.
And then you come back and you take this out.
And I didn't know him at all, but I just figured he was good on his word.
Yeah, you know, he seemed like a trustworthy guy.
This murderer, he just seemed, you know, like...
This stranger...
With a dead body.
Who literally approached me in town. I don't remember his name or his face. Couldn't tell you a damn thing about him. He asked me to cobble a fucking shoe. I said, sure, why not? He came back to my house with me. He drags a trunk in my house. I hear him burying a body. I find said body, find him in town and say, hey, you better come get that body out of my house. And he says, I'll do it tomorrow morning. And you say, I believe you.
Good
I believe
on you, brother.
You, sir. I think you will come back. I think you will come back and get this body.
I'm shooketh.
And he said this. Two investigators, like, they were not going to be like, are
liar.
You fucking shitting me? Are you shitting my dick, Burke? Are you really saying this story to me? A seasoned fucking investigator. And I'm going to go, wow, what bad luck.
Did they even,
what shitty luck Burke has.
Did they even give him an answer? Were they just like, you know what? We have to go now. You're going to jail. Bye.
Oh, yeah. And then, well, because I'm sure it was one of those things where he went through that whole thing and they all just stared at him and you could hear the blink, blink, blink,
yeah.
blink. Because then he was like, yeah, and you know what's crazy? I met that woman earlier in the day. Because
he couldn't
this
stop.
Isn't absurd enough. We have to add on to it. He goes, yeah, she was begging for money. And he said, out of the kindness of my heart, I invited her back to my house for a meal and for some drinks. And she returned to town after that, after I had fed her, after I had given her alcohol. She left my house and she went back into town and I said goodbye. I hope you have a great night. I hope that I have fed you well. I hope I have done what the teachings have told me to do to feed you, to bring you in. And I send you back out to town. And he goes, I never saw her again.
Until
that man left her dead body in my house.
Like, what a coincidence.
And he says a day or two later, the stranger sent two men who Burke had never met before to retrieve the body. And he goes, one of those men who I had never seen before came to my house and his name was William Hare. So now he is claiming that this stranger that dragged a trunk into his house that contained a dead woman who he had met earlier that day, brought to his house to feed and give drink because he was just so kind, sent back into fucking town to be murdered by this stranger that dragged her in a trunk in his house and hid her in a pile of straw in the corner of his bedroom. He claims that he went back into town, found this man, said, you need to come get this body out of my house. This man said, I'll come back later. This man said, I'm sending two of my guys to come get this lady. And he said, sure. These guys show up at his house and he says, never saw him before, just two strangers to me. But one of them was William Hare.
Like, motherfucker, you've been seen around town. I could ask, like, Joe Schmo from down the street, like, hey, you know Burke and Hare? And they'd be like, oh, yeah, those fuckers.
I'm shook.
Like, you're well known in town. You not only are you friends, your wives are friends. You have your squad of four.
Yeah.
Like, yep. What?
Yep.
And, like,
It's unbelievable.
It's unhinged behavior.
And this is fucking ridiculous. It's incredible that he told this story thinking it was going to do anything but make everybody go, what? But you know why every part of the story makes sense for why he put it in there. As absurd as it is, he was trying to explain, one, why people, because he knew he had been seen everywhere. He had been seen with this woman. He had been seen with he had been seen with Hare. He had been seen everywhere. So he's doing this to say why people had seen him with Mary Doherty, both in town and at his home, because neighbors had seen her in his home. Two, why her body and traces of blood were found in his house. He's explaining that away.
Of course.
Why the body had been seen by Gray at the house, but then when the officers came back later that day, it was gone.
Yep.
He's saying, well, those two men came and took her away.
So that's what I have to tell you.
And it's also to say why Hare had been seen selling the body to Dr. Knox the next day, because he was one of those strange men who came and got that body.
I have, like, I've said it before, I'll say it again. I have to go. Like, what?
It's absurd. It's ridiculous. And I'm like, wow, you tried to hit every possible thing that could connect you to this and explain every part of this, but in the stupidest way imaginable.
Seriously.
Like, really wild. And even more wild and unfortunate for him was that it didn't line up with fucking McDougal's fucking confession about it, because they didn't talk about this.
She's like, nah, me and my hubby are bros with them. Sorry we murdered.
One of the main discrepancies between his version of events that he just told, that wild yarn that he just spun.
Oh my God, I love when people call it like a crazy this story was a yarn. Yes.
The main difference and the main issue between that yarn and the one that McDougal's gonna tell is that she was like, oh, we spent the day drinking with William Hare and his lady, Margaret Laird.
Because
we're friends. And they're like, oh, like one of the guys who came to get the body that Burke has never met and, like, didn't know who he was.
You guys spent multiple months, if not years. Was it years that they spent killing? Years,
I mean, months at the very least. It's like,
and you didn't ever, like, I'm happy that you didn't, but, like, it's mind-boggling to me that not once did you sit down and say, hey, like, if we do end up getting caught,
we gotta
this is what we'll say.
Yeah.
Hey, hey, Helen, hey, Laird, come on over. This is our story that we should stick to.
Yeah.
You fucking imbeciles.
Yep.
Like, what?
Yep.
What?
Yep. It's wild.
I have to go.
I love thinking about Burke being like, and then these two men show up and they come to get the body. And I said, oh my God, this stranger's in my house coming to get this body of this woman that I, out of the kindness of my heart, I fed and I sent into town. And then she was dragged in a trunk into my house. This is wild. These two strange men. And these two strange men, one of them is William Hare. It's wild. I've never met that man before in my life. I don't even know who he is. I don't know him. I don't know him, investigators. I do not know him. And then they're like, cool, thank you. And they go into the next room and they're like, hey, Helen, can you tell me what you're doing today? And she's like, oh my God, absolutely.
Totally.
We were drinking all afternoon with William Hare
with and his lady, BFFs. Margaret Laird.
And it's like, wow.
You know, people never cease to surprise me.
Never.
Never.
Never. After McDougal pretty much gave up the ghost there.
After she shot a fucking megalodon-sized hole in that story. Like, the fuck?
Ripped a hole the size of the ozone layer in that story.
I think that's healing.
Oh, good for that.
Yeah.
Good for that hole.
Yeah, we've closed it up a little.
We're doing something right.
I don't know, electric cars, right?
You know what? Positivity.
Yeah!
I like that.
Look at the joy candle.
Look at that. Look at that joy candle.
Anyway.
She's standing up straight.
She cute.
But after that, Burke was like, okay, yeah, I murdered her. Like, he was just like, he was literally like,
he's like, so sorry okay. that I took a creative writing class a few weeks yeah. ago and got confused with that he while like, I was here. Yeah. But I did kill her.
Because they just came over and were like, hey,
you drank with them.
We
today.
Know that you're like real bro-y with William Hare.
We
like,
know do that you
wanna,
you.
Do you want to you wanna edit that statement you gave? And that's all it took. He was like, yeah, I murdered Mary Doherty and several other people.
That would with literally, Hare. Like, from the sounds of how close these couples were, that would be like me say, like, if John like walked yeah. into a room and the police were like, hey, do you know that man? I'd be like, never seen him before in my
no,
life.
No, never seen him.
And they're like, but you've referenced him on this podcast yeah. multiple times. And you're I like, think no, that literally might be your sister's husband. And I'm like, no, I've no, literally never seen so. Him.
I don't know that man.
But I don't know her.
He's a stranger.
like, I don't know what? That person.
It's truly wild.
What?
It's really, you can see now, like, they were just dumb. Just dumb, stupid. Angry guys. That's all.
Dumb, angry guys. Yeah.
In those moments when money isn't moving as fast as your dreams are, Earnin provides the financial momentum that you need to keep moving forward. Earnin is the app that's helping millions of Americans to feel self-sufficient without falling into debt traps. Earnin empowers you to live life to the fullest by providing up to $100 a day of your pay within minutes of earning it. No mandatory fees and no credit check. All you get to do is watch your earnings tick up as you work and access up to $750 per pay period. It's easy and it's free to get started. Add your bank and employment info and they will verify your paycheck. Earnin is designed to support you in the short term and the long term. Money at the speed of you. Get up to $100 a day of your pay within minutes of earning it. No mandatory fees, no credit check. Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in Morbid under podcast when you sign up. It'll really help the show. Morbid under podcast. Subject to your available earnings, location, daily max, and pay period max. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
So basically, the authorities in Edinburgh knew that in order to get a conviction, they just had to get the four of them to turn on each other.
Yeah, that's right. Which was four of them.
Seemingly easy. Yeah. And it might have been because of his younger age or because Doherty's body had been discovered in Burke's house, but Lord Advocate William Ray, he determined that Hare would be the one most likely to turn on Burke.
Okay.
Because although Burke is agreeing that he knows Hare, he hasn't thrown him completely under the bus yet.
Hare also just like gives me more diabolical vibes.
Yeah, and Hare's gonna turn on Burke, he's gonna turn on McDougal, and they were like, he's gonna turn on Laird. I don't think he's got any kind of and loyalty Hare, to these people.
Hare is the one that does the actual suffocating, right?
Yeah, I think he's the aggressor.
Okay.
For sure. They both are. But Hare's just something about him.
Yeah,
something about him. You're right. It makes me a little scareder.
Agreed.
A little more scared of him.
Agreed.
I don't know why. I thought it was kind of funny that like Burke essentially like implicated Hare already, but like go off king, I guess. Like sure, Hare's going to turn on Burke.
Sure.
But despite that, Ray's assumptions seem to have been pretty well placed because he offered Hare immunity in exchange for a full confession, and Hare happily accepted. He said, glad that I got my neck out of the halter. And as for poor Bill Burke, well, he must go hang, I suppose. Sold his friend right up the river.
God.
And was like, guess he's got to hang.
He never gave a shit about him.
No, he didn't give a shit about anybody.
I don't give a shit about either of them. Fuck both of these losers.
From the moment they were arrested and put in a jail cell, all four of the accused were prevented from seeing or speaking to each other. They couldn't communicate at all until the trial. Good. And this makes it that it was probably a huge surprise to Burke that Hare had literally turned completely against him because he had no idea. He went into trial being like, doo, doo, doo. And then it's like, all of a sudden Hare's like, I'm the star witness. It's right. Like, what? Like, that must have been like, excuse me?
Well, he probably especially didn't expect that because he was the one that really did more of
exactly.
the like, so actual suffocating.
He's like, are you fucking kidding me? So as As Lisa Rosner pointed out, when the warrants for arrest and incarceration were handed down, Burke and McDougal probably had some idea that the Lord Advocate was being given information by either Laird or Hare.
Like, the Lord Advocate?
I know, isn't that like a wild...
Like, okay, Scott Disick.
Right?
Step aside, Lord I'm the Advocate. Lord Advocate.
Lord Advocate. Like, so he probably had an idea that information was being given by Hare and Laird. Like, the first warrant for the murder of Mary Dougherty was sworn out against all four, and so was the second one, which was against was for the murder of James Wilson. And only after Hare's detailed confession, the warrant for Wilson's murder was amended and was only against Burke and McDougal. So Hare had none against it. The same happened for the warrant for the murder of Mary Patterson, which only named Burke and McDougal as the perpetrators in that one, too.
Oh.
So now Burke and McDougal are being...
Wow, I did not see that coming.
I didn't either.
Damn.
Now, like we said throughout this whole thing, it's very unclear the exact extent that Helen McDougal played in these murders. She obviously participated in some way, be it an outside side thing. You know, like, she definitely had knowledge of what was happening.
Yeah.
Like, definitely had it. But throughout the murder spree and confessions, William Burke went to great lengths to completely distance Helen from any of the schemes and to protect her from any prosecution.
Mm-hmm.
And for that reason, Burke probably felt even doubly betrayed when he learned that Hare hadn't just sold him out, but had also sold McDougal out.
Right.
Because throughout the entire thing, he had tried to protect her. And it's like now he made sure to, like, and that's the thing, you know, Hare was just... so fucking happy to be able to put McDougal in that whole thing.
I mean, he literally wanted to kill her, so.
Yeah. Now, over the centuries after this, Helen McDougal's name has kind of disappeared from this retelling of this story. Like, she's in there, but no one points to her as, like, what the fuck were you doing?
Yeah, exactly. I do.
But at the time of Hare's confession, which they basically were, they were really going off of Hare's confession at this point. He identified her as equally responsible for the crimes. And so Burke and McDougal were the only two prosecuted for the murders.
Are you kidding me?
Burke and McDougal were indicted December 8th, 1828 for the murders of Mary Dougherty, James Wilson, and Mary Patterson. Their trial began December 24th, and it went a full 24 hours. It was presided
went
over...
Went into Christmas?
It went into Christmas. It was presided over by a panel of four justices. It began at 9 a.m., and from the moment the doors were opened, the courtroom was packed.
Yeah, because back then
people.
You could just, like, fucking find your way into a courtroom.
And they just wanted to see these ghouls. They had read a ton about them in the paper because there was tons of media surrounding this case. And after they read the indictments, both of the accused pleaded not guilty. Before the trial could begin, however, Burke's attorney argued it was inappropriate for his client to be tried for three unconnected murders. And after a long discussion, the justices agreed with Burke's attorney.
Interesting.
And ruled in favor of trying one case at a time.
Okay.
So they didn't want to try the three unconnected murders in one trial. So after they announced the decision, Lord Advocate William Ray was given the opportunity to choose which charge he wanted to begin with, and he chose the murder of Dougherty because he figured it was the strongest case.
Right.
So the trial went on with several witnesses saying they had seen Dougherty with Burke throughout the day. And also, because Burke had claimed the woman was a heavy drinker, at least one witness refuted that claim, telling the jury she, quote, never saw her worse or for liquor.
Oh.
And the prosecution laid out the evidence of the murder, including the body having been discovered by the Grays in Burke's house, the bloodstains on the clothing, the bloodstains on the bedding, on the floor. The examination of the body showing very clear evidence of strangulation and that she did not die of an overdose.
Yep.
The strength of the physical evidence was definitely bolstered by the Crown's key witness.
Hare.
William Hare. He testified that it was Burke who plotted with McDougal to kill Dougherty for money. And he said, quote, he had an old wife in the house and that it was a shot for the doctors. And Hare went a step further, telling the jury that Dougherty had left the house several times, but had been enticed to come back inside each time by none other than Helen McDougal.
Ooh.
So throughout the trial, Lord Advocate William Ray and his assistant prosecutors were very, very deliberate and very measured in their questioning of Hare on the stand.
Okay.
They were very careful to avoid any kind of question that might incriminate him in any of the crimes.
Well, yeah, I mean, that makes sense.
He did, however, admit on the stand that he had sold the body to Knox.
Okay.
But his participation in the murder of Dougherty was otherwise very minimized.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, his role in the actual murders, completely ignored. There were no witnesses called by the defense. They just completely ignored it. And after the evidence was given and closing statements were made, the jury deliberated. It was a little after 8 a.m. on December 25th on Christmas.
Oh my God, I'm surprised by that.
Took about an hour, and they returned a guilty verdict for Burke's participation in the murder of Mary Dougherty, and he was sentenced to hang.
Merry Christmas, motherfucker!
The charge against Helen McDougal was found to be unfounded.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you don't hear her name and her guilty ass in this story.
What's even worse is it's 100% a certainty that Margaret Laird was involved in the whole scheme.
She was paid.
But she got no consequences.
And what about Hare?
Yep. So it's so wild to me. While Burke did his best to shield Helen of consequences for the crimes that they had committed, it was really the defense attorney, Henry Cockburn, who saved her from having to hang.
I mean, yeah.
Throughout the trial, he painted a picture of McDougal as a dutiful wife who lived with seeing many things which are better imagined than told. Basically saying she saw some shit, she knew what he would do to her, so she kept her mouth shut and she did what she was told to do. And it was true that she hadn't informed the police of Burke's crimes, but it was only because she, quote, felt obliged to make false statements in order to protect Burke and avoid basically becoming destitute.
Yeah.
And in this time, especially, that is an argument. She didn't want to be thrown out on the streets because that was almost certain death eventually.
Right.
And so they were basically being like, she feared for her own life, which doesn't give her, like, that doesn't spare her from being a criminal. But it also is like a way to defend her in a court of law.
Exactly.
You know, like it makes it like.
I understand the argument.
Exactly. It also helped her case immensely that there was no evidence and no testimony that could even slightly connect her to the murders.
Right.
Which she was found not guilty in the end. Now, on the morning of January 25th, 1828, a crowd of nearly 25,000 people gathered in Lawn Market, which is a town square off High Street, and they watched William Burke hang in the gallows.
Damn, so people were like abandoning their Christmas meals just to be like, let's go watch this man.
Well, this was January 25th.
Oh, so you said January, bad, sorry.
Maybe I did say December by accident.
No, you probably said January.
So a month later.
No, you said it right.
You were right. A month later.
Okay.
But what's kind of ironic is Burke's body was donated to the medical college the following day. And was dissected by Professor Alexander Monroe, the doctor that they were looking for initially when they accidentally knocked on Dr. Knox's door.
Yo.
Isn't that wild? And he was dissected in front of an audience of nearly 20,000 people.
Wow.
Yep. And when he finished the dissection, Dr. Monroe apparently, he did this thing, and it's called an anatomist ritual, it was called.
Love
where
that.
He dipped his quill into the blood still contained in Burke's head and wrote the following declaration in blood. This is written with the blood of William Burke, who was hanged at Edinburgh on 28th January. Oh, it was on the 28th. Excuse me. I got it wrong.
That's okay.
The 28th of January, 1829, for the murder of Mrs. Campbell or Dougherty. The blood was taken from his head on the 1st of February, 1829.
They were
Isn't
on
that
some,
spooky as fuck?
They were on some wild shit back then.
They really were.
That's on like some opium thought process.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you know what we should do? We should make a declaration.
Dip a quill into his head.
From the blood of his skull.
Yeah.
Like, and y'all were really God-fearing? I don't know about that.
I mean, if you're worried about whether Helen McDougal just went on to live her life, I can help you not worry about that.
I was. That was my next question after I got past the fact that they just, like, wrote a quick little post-it with his fucking blood.
She was released from custody following the trial, and she tried to go home.
How'd that work
out? She was met by a large group who'd assembled outside of her house and made it pretty clear that she better get the fuck out of Edinburgh or they were going to make sure that she didn't get out of there alive.
Ooh.
It's pretty assumed that she fled the city later, like very quickly after that. But no one knows what happened to her after that.
Okay.
She left Edinburgh.
Hit me up with the deets on hair.
People do think she was killed by an angry mob or that she changed her name completely and lived in like isolated somewhere.
Wow.
I will say the family of Jamie Wilson.
Yeah.
The young man who everyone literally knew and loved. They protested against Hare's freedom.
Good.
And aggressively petitioned the government to reconsider the immunity he was given in exchange for his testimony.
I bet.
The Wilson's petition was given very serious consideration. But the Crown ultimately decided that they were going to keep the immunity for his testimony, and Hare was very unfortunately released from custody on February 5th.
Damn.
But unfortunately for Hare, the public knew what he fucking did.
Mm-hmm.
And his very much equal participation in the murders, they knew about that too. It took less than a day for a mob to assemble outside the boarding house, intending to kill him themselves. For his own protection, he was taken into police custody, where he was dressed and disguised and escorted out of the city via the road to Carlisle. Although he was never seen or heard from again, it's believed he either went to England or went back to Ireland and was never seen or heard from again.
You know that motherfucker murdered again.
100%.
Because he was the one that, in my opinion, was way more diabolical. I think they were both fucked up and
but
diabolical.
But something about Hare.
There was more to that.
Something about him. Yeah, he got away with it.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's crazy. They should look into some fucking unsolved murders in England, wherever he went.
I actually want to look back and see if there's any connections later.
There's gotta be.
And I'll let you know if we find anything.
I don't think he just like was like, well, all done.
See you later. I'll just live a very quiet life after this.
What about his wife?
He was probably bolstered. So she was released from custody in mid-January, and she left Edinburgh for Glasgow. And while she was in Glasgow, she was discovered by an angry mob and had to be rescued by the authorities, who put her and her baby, she had a baby at this point, on a boat and sent her to Ireland.
Shit.
Although we don't talk about, like, when you read about this story, you don't hear a lot about what happened to Dr. Knox or his wrongdoing in all of this.
Right.
He definitely claimed ignorance, for sure. But he was confronted by authorities, and they were like, you definitely knew something was amiss here. You
right.
might not have known the details, but it's pretty hard to believe that he had no idea that that they were possibly murdering people to supply him with bodies. Because
mm-hmm.
that last body had very clear evidence. Doherty had clear evidence of being strangled, and he turned his eyes the other way.
He also pretended like he didn't know that it was Jamie.
But what's weird is Burke, when he confessed, went out of his way to clear Knox of any wrongdoing as well. He swore that Knox, quote, never encouraged, never taught, or encouraged him to murder any person.
Yeah, I'm sure he didn't. I think he just turned a blind eye.
And it's like, yeah, no one's saying, exactly. Like, no one's saying that he told you to go murder people, but, like, he knew you were.
He didn't tell you to stop murdering people.
Exactly. And it's like, luckily, because he should definitely not be let off scot-free here.
No.
The public didn't forget his participation in everything either.
Good.
And after public outrage, he willingly resigned from his position.
Bye, bitch.
And Knox left Edinburgh several years later and resettled in London, where he died in 1882.
Peace out, motherfucker.
And that is the story of Burke and Hare.
Girl, that's a wild tale. And you did, like, a really great job telling
Thank
it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much.
I was like...
And thanks to Dave for, like,
Dave.
Diving deep in that one.
I love Dave.
We love Dave.
Dave. He's notorious.
It's and you know what? We're working on another one that connects to this case.
Oh my god.
And I think Dave described it as like a Hardy Boys book, but if there was serial killers and coffins.
Yeah, that's exactly what he said actually. I was present for that combo.
So it's going to be great.
Guys. I'm intrigued.
This story just is like fascinating to me, mainly because of the ending. One, how reckless and risky they get and brazen, mm-hmm. and how they just fuck everything up from within.
Yeah.
Two, how William Hare just I don't know what it is about him, but I'm like, you're scary. Like, Burke is scary, but like Harry, I'm like, something about you. And then the fact that he just gets away with it.
Well, he like asserted dominance by like killing his cousin.
He did.
And was like, I also want to kill your wife. He was just, I don't
know.
Then
he made sure that she had to get named in those indictments. Like,
yeah.
That's some like power shit. And it's like scary.
Mm-hmm. Like, those are like something happened between him and McDougal.
Like, I know, right?
There's, I think, some he made weird like an shit advance that like she was like, that get she the fuck away from me. Yeah.
And he was not about to deal with that.
I mean, like, I just like really like made a leap there, but I don't know.
I don't know. I think there's a Buffy episode recently where it's like, don't jump to conclusions. And it's like, what I don't, I just took, I think she says like, I just walked around the corner and their conclusions were.
Yeah, exactly.
I think this is the same situation. It's like, I don't think that's a leap. You just walked around a corner and their conclusions were.
And with that being said, we were talking the other day. We're always like, oh my gosh, we should do like a chiller episode for a palate cleanser, which like we're still going to do. But if we ever do like an intense case and you need a palate cleanser, or if you don't and you just want to listen to another show, go listen to the Rewatcher Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It's so much fun. We're rewatching Buffy. Elena has seen it a million gazillion trillion times, but I never have.
And in the last episode, they used a clip from Taken of Liam Neeson saying, I will find you and I will kill you. And you don't know what that's in reference to.
And if that's not convincing enough,
you should go listen
enough,
and find out.
I don't know about you.
They put fun clips in there and fun little sound things. And
they
it's
put
like,
the, dun, 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 dun.
It's so fun, guys. Like that, and that you, podcast gives us the most
life,
joy in the entire world. Because it's just fun, silly nostalgia.
Yeah, exactly. And if you don't know, now you know.
Yeah, go listen to it.
So with that being said, we hope you keep listening.
And we hope you
keep
it
weird. But not so weird as hair. Definitely not so weird as Burke and hair ever, or McDougal or Laird. But never, ever, ever keep it as weird as hair. Because I don't even know how weird that motherfucker kept it, but he kept it too weird. I can tell you that
much. Yeah, he definitely kept it too weird.
So like, bye. If you like Morbid, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.